Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. It's Text Line Tuesday. Keep them coming, and we're going to get to them after we talk to Nate Geary, our WGR 550 Bills pregame and halftime show host. Nate. Good morning.
Good morning. It sounds like a funeral. What's happening?
You know what, Nate?
Well,
first of all, you ghosted us on our last two appearances that we had you for, so I just wanted to make sure you were on the line before I got my energy. How are we this morning?
I'm here. I'm low energy this morning, as you might imagine. I was doing post-game till about 2 a.m., but we tuckered through, we managed through, and now comes the aftermath, so...
Okay, so I got to know about what the general vibe of the fan base is from the call standpoint, because my interpretation of it was there were some people that basically tried to make excuses for the Bills that went like, oh, they could have had if it was not the conditions and if it was the field goals that get made and blah, 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 and it wasn't so bad. And then it seemed like there were Bills fans who were apoplectic. There were people that were close to me were like, I called the Bills dead today. I called them soft. I called them dead. I've written them off completely after this win. So, like, I feel like it's probably these two extremes. Was that basically the vibe of the calls? Like, where are you sitting today when it comes to this? Where's the fan base at when it comes to this?
Yeah, I think more so the thing about this game was always going to be sort of the aftermath. The Monday Night Football game, you get the entire Tuesday of network and nationwide news here in the U.S., right? You've got NFL Network, who's going to be talking about that game for the next 2.5 hours. ESPN's First Take, you know, Stephen A is going to go on and do his thing. And Bills fans are going to be, you know, essentially running from their television sets today. So that's sort of that vibe, because this was one of those games where, you know, you had the boogeyman over your shoulder and you could have really done well in, you know, burying the hatchet at least for a couple of weeks until you face off again in New England in a couple of weeks. But listen, I mean, they are on the road next week against Tom Brady, who literally yesterday said, or 2 days ago on Sunday after his, you know, 4-touchdown and 300-yard game on his way to an MVP season at age 500 or whatever he is, you know, says that this Bills game is the biggest game on their schedule, is the biggest game of their year, which, you know, is fantastic considering, you know, they basically have to win that game, because if you lose, you have zero margin. You have to win the last four games to make it to the playoffs. I don't think the Bills can mathematically, I know that I think like the New York Times has a playoff machine that you can do scenarios in, has them at like an 80% chance to win or to make the playoffs with 10 wins. But they are going to be in a tight spot when it comes to tiebreakers, guys. Like the Cincinnati Bengals have them on the conference record. Obviously, the Colts have them in the head-to-head record, which is the first tiebreaker. The Chargers have the better conference record. And those are three teams right now. They're all playing better than the Bills. So I don't know. I think it's pretty doom and gloom here. I think there's a lot of blame to kind of go around. I think the most disappointing part is A, it happened on your home field. B, the opponent threw the ball three times, and C, and maybe most importantly is this team had 10 days to prepare for that game. And it looked like, they were coming off of a Monday night game themselves or 3 days rest or something. It just was not. It did not look like they were prepared from a coaching perspective. I thought there was a lot of coaching errors in that game. They coached over conservatively, and it took them way too long to adjust. I mean, waiting until the fourth quarter to make a move on Matt Milano on the backside to blow up those runs. I mean, where was that after the second defensive possession on the offense? They clearly did not struggle as badly as I think they thought they might have thrown the football. Josh Allen actually threw the ball quite well considering the elements, and it just took them too long to lean into that. So the coaching adjustments and kind of how that game went, I think goes a long way in kind of how people are feeling today.
Yeah, well, we're trying to like break it down because it's a wide range of emotions when you see a game like that as a fan. And I think you're right on the coaching decisions that seem to be the one for me that I'm stuck on, especially on how the opposing coach decided to run the plays and the lack of adjustments and how long it took. So a little bit more on maybe what could have been changed during the game and how much of that sits on the coach's shoulders for the rest of the week here.
Yeah, it's, I, I guess hindsight's always 20/20, mm-hmm. but I guess when you look back at that game, you know, there was a moment at the end of the third quarter where Matt Milano went to the sideline and there was very clearly a conversation, not a heated conversation, just a conversation about what to do between Matt Milano and Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier on the sideline. And the following two plays, Milano shoots that backside gap where the backside guard was pulling as a lead blocker play side, and he blew up three consecutive plays on first, second, and third down. They end up kicking that field goal. And I look back at that drive, and the Bills basically gave up a seven-minute drive for them to figure out how to stop it, really when it was too late. And that's just an adjustment I need the defensive head coach of this team to make after the 64-yard touchdown run. They ran 4-3 personnel more than they have combined all season. They haven't ran three linebacker sets since week six. A.J. Klein, before this football game, who's probably their best downhill run linebacker, doesn't play a lot because they don't, again, play a lot of those three linebacker sets. But they missed him, I think, pretty greatly. They had Tyrell Dotson, who is a, you know, depth special teams player, playing 40-plus snaps yesterday, and I can guarantee you that was not in preparation at all this week. So in a last-minute effort, you know, you're asking a guy who has played a handful of snaps this year to go out there against a complex run offense, and I just don't think that was set that team up for success. On the offensive side of the ball, they simply, you know, obviously the Matt Breida fumble put him in the doghouse, and that was sort of it for him. I think he ended up playing seven snaps for the rest of the game after that play. And, you know, I get it. It's hard to trust the guy. You want to give him the opportunity to run the football. But putting Zach Moss in the game essentially sealed the deal for them. He has no ability to bounce the ball outside on inside runs. And, you know, everyone will kind of harp on the video that's sort of circulating this morning of having a very clear bounce out lane for him to get and walk into the end zone for a touchdown, but he decided to cut it back inside and was stopped for no gain. And that's sort of the microcosm of this Bills running game, is they don't have the horses in the backfield to really threaten teams and get them out of the two high safety looks that they've been seeing almost all year. But I mean, going back in that game, well, first of all, I just how you can score that first touchdown being down 8-0 and not even consider going for 2 points is baffling to me. You know, if you're scared to throw the football at that point in the game, which that was, I believe, Josh Allen's second attempt throwing the football. Like, if you know it's going to be a low scoring game and you don't want to put the ball in the hands of your quarterback to throw, you got to go for that 2-point conversion. You got to try, because that way, essentially, guys, they were chasing those points, that point, for the rest of the game. And that ultimately came down to kicking a field goal in 40-mile-per-hour winds when, if you watched it in pregame, I mean, it was a circus trying to kick into that wind. And there they are trying to kick into the wind, down four. So, yeah, I don't know. It just was a lot of boneheaded, I think, I want to say uncharacteristic, but it seemingly this year, it does sort of fit the mold of how this team and how Coach Sean McDermott has been coaching in these key situations. I posted a stat. The Bills in 2020 were 5-1 in one score games. They're 0-4 this year in one score games. And those things come down to a play here, a penalty called or not called there, a challenge flag, a field goal attempt when you shouldn't do it. And that, it's as easy as that, guys. It could easily be 11 and whatever, you know, like this year. They could be 11-2 right now, 11-1, whatever we are at this point. Like with the schedule the way it is, adding this extra game, I'm all off on my math on the schedule. Yeah. But being 0-4 in one score games, I mean, that's your killer right there.
Yeah, no, that's a tough stat. And usually those things, like, they regress both ways, right? When you're 5-1 in those tight games, it's somewhere going to come probably closer to the truth. Where you're 0-4, it's probably closer to the middle where it's the truth. But yeah, that's a damning stat. And I will say this, like, last night, obviously, McDermott, he's taken all the slings, all the arrows. And it makes sense, right? For a lot of the reasons that you've just outlined. And I thought it was just an incredibly bad look. I didn't watch the whole post-game media conference. I wasn't there, like, doing your show where you guys probably played the audio, but having that grab of let's not give more credit than we need to Bill Belichick in this one, like it just didn't, to add that on top of the loss is just, it felt like a real defining game for McDermott. I will say this, man. I wonder about the criticisms up the ladder here, though, because I'm with you. I thought Josh Allen looked good. And I was actually frustrated watching this game. I'm not a Bills fan. I was just frustrated as a football fan going, hey, you drafted this guy. You built your identity around this guy because he's supposed to be able to be like element proof. That's the reason you got him. Yep. He's this big bruising quarterback that can throw through the wind. And not once did I watch him throw a ball last night where I went, boy, that's like wind. Like I was like, is it windy when he's throwing it? he's got a cannon. And to the point where, okay, some of his receivers are dropping footballs, and so maybe that's part of the equation here, but they didn't open it up for him. I'm like, you have this one advantage. This is supposed to be the identity of your team, this MVP caliber player, and you're leaning into a rushing attack that doesn't really work or hasn't worked for you basically during its entire existence. Then I look at the other side of the ball, and I go, you're getting dominated in the trenches. Your team is soft. Your team is soft, and this is rushing attack after rushing attack, and we can say, oh, it's just Jonathan Taylor, oh, it's just Derrick Henry, oh, it's just the Patriots. It's like, well, those are the good teams, and you're supposed to be built for this weather. You're supposed to be the team that's built to play in Buffalo. And yet, outside of Josh Allen, I came away from that game. I went into it thinking, well, what are you really going to learn in a game like this when the weather's like this? And I came out of it thinking, no, this is a team that's in Buffalo. This is a team that needs to win games in Foxborough. And they don't look like they're a tough enough team to win in the cold. They don't look like a tough enough team to win in the elements unless it's their quarterback that does everything for them.
Yeah, listen, I mean, they defensively, they pivoted and built a defensive team to stop the Kansas City Chiefs. The problem is everybody else stopped the Kansas City Chiefs this year. Yep. And your offense is built like the Kansas City Chiefs, and they've got your number right now, too. So now, and this is, it just goes to show you the ebbs and flows of the NFL, right? Like, you know, a good 25, 30 game stretch of really just, and maybe it's longer than maybe I'm not giving this stretch of football from like the Mahomes and the Allens and the Rodgers where, you know, they're just beating teams senselessly over the head, deep on deep shot after deep shot after deep shot. And defenses finally punched back and they started running this two deep safety look, and offenses everywhere have been befuddled. And really what this comes down to is when you've got too high safety, you have to be able to turn around and hand the ball off to get that safety back down in the box. And the Bills have been unable to do that this year. And it's, you know, probably reason number one that over the first six games, this offense averaged 35 points a game, and over their last six have averaged 22. I mean, that's a drop of 13 points a game. And a lot of that, I think you can strictly just point to, they're not striking any fear into opposing defenses running the football. And I am not a huge, you have to run the football guy. I don't think they have to. I think the Bills run the ball enough. They just get no success when they do it. And how you bench Isaiah McKenzie and Marquez Stevenson, the only two guys that really represent like the way you stretch a defense east and west. So they keep going north and south in between the tackles. It's not working. They don't have any personnel that's active on game day that they can turn the ball and hand on jet sweeps or pre-snap motions or window dressing, nothing. It was, we're going to turn around and hand the ball off, and if you stop us, we don't have a response. And, you know, it took them way too long. I saw the drive success rate for the Bills in that game. And a success rate, I believe, is a drive that ends in at least one first down. 92% of their drives that started with a pass ended with at least one first down. Mm. And 11% of their drives, they started with a run, ended in a first down. So I just don't know why it took so long for the Bills to abandon it. I think your point about this coming from the top is probably right. I think this head coach has made it very clear how he wants to win football games and how he thinks his offense needs to play. And when you're the offensive coordinator, and you have to feel like you have to run a certain amount of run plays symbolically to appease your coach because he wants to win a certain type of way. And you're moving away from the things and the principles that got you to this point. I think that's where you're coming up with real problems. So people can blame Brian Daboll. I'm of the mind where I'm probably going to defend the offensive coordinator a little bit because I think he was handed an offensive team in the offseason and was asked, guys, be better at running the football, except we're not going to give you any new weapons. We're not going to change anything on the offensive line. Good luck. And I just don't know how any, you know, short of getting a little gimmicky, which is what I think Andy Reid has done, I would have welcomed a little gimmick there from Brian Daboll. And what I mean by that is, I don't know, a reverse to, I don't know, something where you're just doing more than turning around and handing the ball off in an ISO and getting stuffed for a one or two or at some points just losses. So, yeah, I mean, guys, the laundry list is long, and I think all of this could have been avoided if the Bills, you know, find a way to score in one of their four red zone trips, and they pull out a one score game. It's not like we learn a lot, but like we're not having these conversations, that's for sure.
So these two teams play again on Boxing Day, and you just laid out a lot of ways that they could have tweaked their lineup or their approach in this last one, and maybe it would have turned out better. I guess the big question is, do you think McDermott's actually going to do that? Are we going to be sitting here on December 27th having a similar conversation about this team's inflexibility? And if so, what does that mean for the direction of this team?
Yeah, there's a lot to be made about how the next couple of weeks are going to go, because if they continue doing what they're doing, I think it's a huge disservice to the roster. They need to fully lean on Josh Allen, not going into this week, but it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was week 11 or week 12, that I saw a stat that Josh Allen accounted for more percentage of his team's offense than any other player in the league at 76.8% of the team's offensive output on the year. That probably should get to about 80, 85% by the end of the year, if they're smart. And that means designed quarterback runs, which they ran none of yesterday, which was baffling to me. Josh Allen should have had 100 plus rushing yards in that game, and he ends up with 30 on basically scrambles and zero designed runs. So if I were Josh Allen, if I were Brian Daboll and Sean McDermott, the first thing I'm doing is handing the keys to the offense to Josh Allen and saying, this is your show. We're living and dying by you, because right now they're trying to rely too much on running backs that can't play. And I think they need to, this offense needs to flow through directly Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And that's how it needs to go for the remaining 5 weeks of the year. And if they can do that, I think they'll have a fighting chance of getting themselves in the tournament. And then anything happens, you know, they just get to the playoffs and anything can happen. And then I think for me, you know, the Patriots threw the ball three times in that game. It was pretty telling to me that the storyline that we probably won't talk about is that the rookie quarterback that everyone, you know, agrees is really good and the best rookie this year. I mean, if that's the faith their coach has in conditions like that, now it wasn't a great game conditions wise, but they face similar weather in Foxborough. It's going to be cold when they play in December. Are they not going to be able to throw the football because it's cold and because it's windy? Like that might be an issue for them moving forward. And I think in that matchup, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to really be paying attention to, you know, what that passing attack from the Patriots looks like, because they basically put no passing concepts on film. So they're going to be able to throw a lot at the Bills that they simply did not show in this matchup yesterday. And we'll kind of see how that looks in a couple of weeks. But listen, guys, my attention's, you know, directly on this Tampa Bay game now next week and how this team responds against, I think, a defense that is good up front. They're going to, if their game plan is to turn around and hand the ball off like they did yesterday, they're going to have very similar results. It's one of the best defensive lines in all the league in Tampa Bay, but their secondary is a disaster, and they definitely need to try to go after them and hurt them in that secondary. They made Carson Wentz look like a pretty darn good quarterback 2 weeks ago against the Colts. So I think for me, this Bucs team is really good. It's led by Tom Brady, who's running an MVP campaign, but they've also lost to the Saints and to the Washington football team, two teams the Bills absolutely lambasted. So the Bills really need a bounce back win, and man, let me just tell you guys, if in consecutive weeks to end this team's season, they lose to Belichick and then Brady, I'm going to, I'm just, nostalgia is not kind on this one.
Oh, yep. So Buffalo back in action against the Bucks on Sunday. We'll be watching your Twitter feed quite carefully, because it's always something that I love to tune into. So thanks so much, Nate, for joining us this morning, and we'll see how next week fares.
See you, Nate.
Yeah, same to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Nate Geary, WGR 550 Bills pregame and halftime show host.
By the way, little news while we were doing that. Vlad won the Tip O'Neill Award as Canadian Baseball Player of the Year per the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum.
I've never heard of that award.
I have, but it's like,
it's a little interesting.
He wins it because he was born in Montreal.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Sorry. That's like a weird, like, we're trying to get attention on the Baseball Hall of Fame thing.
Yeah,
which
especially
is
in a year where, like, Votto had a great year. Tyler O'Neill had a great year.
Exactly.
A lot of guys. Jordan Romano.
Yeah.
Friend of the show.
I'm sorry. I like the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. Support it, but that's stupid.
Look, do you want your Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame getting on TikTok?
Yeah.
Give it to Jordan Romano.
That's just right.
Speaking of, like, breaking news, Mitch Marner, right? Kipper reporting that he's going to be out longer than we anticipated. Apparently there's more information coming in now. Mm-hmm. Like a bunch, like all the insiders are starting to like chime in on what's going on.
This
here.
Is how it goes, right? One person tweets it out and then everyone's
Kipper had it. And then everyone's going to be like, oh yeah. Oh, big win for Kipper. Yeah. All right. Kipper.
Could be a couple more games. It sounds
It's looking like it's not severe, which would be a pretty crazy departure from they're being overly cautious. But I think that this would actually still line up with Elliot's reporting that they're being overly cautious, but that it could be out a little bit longer, that it's two things can be true situation here. But it's looking like it's a week or two for Marner. And I got to tell you, that sucks because so far, these couple of games, part of the feeling for me anyways was, hey, you know what? They're doing this without Mitch Marner. Like the power play is clicking without Mitch Marner, and they're having these moments without one of their star players. That being said, and I'm not, I really don't mean this to get like too hot takey. So I know this is going to get interpreted that way, but you're about to play some pretty meaningful games. Like you're about to host the Lightning, and then you have a road trip where you go and play the Oilers and the Flames, who you played a lot last season, who are very familiar with you. And those are going to be some high stakes narrative games. Those are going to be some, don't forget, Tkachuk is back with the Flames. Like they're back together. Last year, the reports were they unraveled after the Muzzin thing. Like you don't think they have that circle on the calendar? You don't think that Connor McDavid has Leafs circled on the calendar? You don't think that those guys are going to want to get one for Hyman? Like those are going to be really, really big road tests. And the idea that you wouldn't have Mitch Marner for those two games, I think there's two things that suck. One is that you don't really get to fully test your team properly because you're missing one of your best players. But two, if you do go out and have success, it really does build some whirlwind narratives. Like, so the Leafs can win without the $11 million man. The Leafs have a road trip where they're bonding without the $11 million man. I'm just saying, like, this feels like a pretty big lose-lose if you're the Maple Leafs, and you're a Marner fan, and you're somebody who's enjoyed sort of the, hey, what sort of bad thing are we supposed to talk about from the season that isn't, you know, picking at nits, which isn't like, hey, how can the Leafs upgrade on a $2 million defenseman?
Yeah, I mean, the counter to that would be, this gives them a little, with how banged up they are, this gives them a little insulation of they were always going to come back down to earth from the 15-2 stretch. Mm-hmm. And if it happens now, it's a little more understandable. Like, I'm not saying lose, like drop the next five, but you know, you go 3-2 over these next five or something like that, and they look human again. Maybe that's the insulation of like, hey, this was always going to regress a little bit, but now there's it's an easy story to tell as to why. But yeah, if they keep rolling and they keep stomping teams, but then you're going to have questions about, like, well, they're doing this not just without Marner, but they're doing it with a shaky decor and without Mikheyev. And,
with one goaltender.
Yeah. With Spezza suspended, probably, from what it sounds like.
Did they say what Marner's, like, do we know what it is? Like, what?
A body injury.
Which, again, to the gambling world is a tough one. I will say this, too, is, like, this has been a story that we're just not there yet, but this is the first time that I'm going to think about it, which is just the standings. I mentioned earlier during our gambling block how the Leafs have been really good at home. Jack Campbell's been really good at home. You want to have home ice advantage. Like, there's no doubt about it. I know that we care less about home court, home ice, home field now because we've sort of figured out over time and sample that it's not the advantage that we once thought it was.
Or, I mean, it's not even that it's not the advantage we once thought it was. It's that once that's out there, then teams try to attack that, right? And like NBA teams change their sleep and travel schedules around it, and NFL teams mess around with, hey, do we get there early, do we get there late, what do we do around that?
My point is that this could be a stretch where you end up losing that slight advantage. Like, this is something where I know that you've been ripping off wins, and the Leafs are 7-2-1 in their last 10. You know who else is? The Lightning and the Panthers. Those are two really, really, really good teams, and now you have this stretch where maybe you do drop one to the Lightning. Maybe you do drop one to the Oilers. or the Flames, one of those two teams over the next couple of weeks here, that just like you have lost two in a row, and now you have a schedule that sets up for like you better beat Columbus and Chicago over the next 2 weeks, maybe even the Canucks, who might even get the, you know, new coach bounce for the next couple of weeks. I could just see, like, I'm not trying to doomsday this. I think I've been
I just, I like calling it the dead coach bounce.
Yeah.
I don't like the, it's the removal of the bad coach that causes the bounce, not the, not the addition.
Did you see them all chanting? Bruce.
Yeah. I mean,
Bruce, there it is.
Yeah. See, that's
Bruce,
what I mean.
There it is. Like, the vibes are high in Vancouver all of a sudden.
Yeah. They couldn't have got lower, so
that's
here you
true.
Go.
They were bare minimal.
Yeah, just like the next, until Christmas here, like until the 23rd. The schedule, I would say, is, you know, intermediate. It's not impossible. There's some let-ups on the schedule. I don't think that the NHL is chock full of incredible teams this year. I think the Leafs are still good enough to survive a loss of Marner. But, yeah, they have lost two without him, and we haven't really talked about it where we go, hey, I spun it yesterday. Again, you can go to my Instagram story, on my Instagram in general, at JD Bunkus. Like, I did my take it or leave it about how it was positive yesterday or this weekend when they did have the losses. But they still did lose two games without Mitch Marner. And so it just doesn't feel very good. Either you win without him and people start to make narratives, or you lose without him, you realize his importance, but you've still lost games and now you're falling behind the eight ball.
Do you want to know where my stupid salary cap brain goes?
Yeah, to how much they can save here.
Well, Marner. So today's what, the 7th? Say Marner does miss another 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That takes you to 21st. That is one game and three extra days from being LTIR eligible.
Mm.
Do you, like, say he could come back the 21st, but Mrazek and Mikheyev are also both back. That's maybe an option. If they're being supremely cautious with this.
I mean, well, yeah, you would be a little extra cautious because they don't play until the 20th. Like, they go 19th to 23.
That's the thing. So you would be basically be saying you have to decide that by the 19th when the roster freeze happens, but you have to, you have that, like, hey, there's only one game over the next 6 days.
No, if he's out 1 week, if the injury is not as bad and he misses a week, then you bring him back as soon as you can. You don't think about it. But if he is out 2 weeks, then I think you are considering that his return is the 23rd against the Blues at home. That he's not coming with you
but
on this road trip.
What I'm saying is, if that's his return, it might make sense to just LTIR him to punt that down the line.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You can't have him for the 23rd because the 23rd is too close.
Yeah.
It's because he'd only be at 9 games in 22 days at that point. Mm. So you got to go 10 and 24.
Mm.
So you miss him one more game. But yeah, obviously this is like way down the line and galaxy braining an injury. But you know me, I'm the positive optimist guy on the show. So
it's weird though, because no, like, they've been losing games. You'd rather have Mitch Marner, but the power play has been incredible. Again, they scored 5 times over the weekend. I do wonder if one of the stories that's going to come out of this, if the power play continues to click, is, hey, should Marner be running a different unit rather than being on that first
Spezza
one?
I don't think on PP1, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they'd ever. Well, that actually helps Marner. That Spezza is probably going to get slapped with at least 3 games, I would imagine. That if Pionk got 2 and he's getting the in-person hearing, Pionk, that he's going to get at least 3. That would be my guess. Let's take a break. Let's come back with more text, more reaction to this. Whatever you want to do. It's the Fan Morning Show. Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Send your texts in. It's the Fan Morning Show. The last block of the day. It's Text Line Tuesday.
Yeah.
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 Milk.
Milk.
Got thoughts?
Milk. I got some texts here about milk. Sean from Pickering.
Got strong bones. Got strong teeth.
Milk. There it is.
Got
Sean.
Big takes.
Shawnee boy says, I was in Switzerland a couple years ago. Okay. Cool flex.
Yeah.
Milk there just tastes so, so good and totally different.
You, Sean.
Those Alpine cows. Oh yeah, man, where can I find them here?
Shut up.
Alpine cows. We're going to start importing cows. Alpine cows.
You nerd. Like, as if you're doing that. Oh, the milk. I can only picture every time somebody you know is like, oh, I'm going to grab them. So I'm just going to have a milk.
Oh, this one time I was in Switzerland.
Did I ever tell you about the milk in Switzerland? You're like, oh.
So this is less fancy than the milk, I guess. Or fancy is not the right word, but
okay.
I have a friend who's a musician. They tour Europe all the time, and it's always.
That's kind of that's a flex, too.
It's always the. I forget if it's Junior Chicken or McDouble, but like apparently they're way better in the Netherlands.
Whatever
it is, it's like this particular fast food item is better in a European country. It's like there's no you got to give me the why or the how. I don't get
Netherlands.
It.
I don't know. I just, yeah, that seems like the, just the force. I want to know if there's any of Sean's
friends.
That
guy's definitely
told
that story on every date he's ever been on.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's ordering a glass of milk on his date and being like, oh, spits it out. This milk's okay, but.
Or be like, he'll order something with cheese. Only if the cheese is from Switzerland. It was once in Switzerland. Did I mention I was in Switzerland?
What altitude were the cows at for this milk?
It's so different. My palate is just so intense that I can only really have alpine milk. For only that. Only the best for Sean from where, did he say?
Pickering.
Sean from Pickering.
I'd already forgot his name, and I assumed it was like Remington or something.
Oh,
like exactly.
Remington.
What else is there?
Lots. We can get to some real stuff.
Okay. Does anybody have anything else on Marner right now?
Currently, nobody said anything about Marner yet. And
nobody's on Marner, right? I'm surprised.
They're all just shocked in their
Ask you guys a question, though? Like, even with him out, like, what's your just initial feel for this? Because, like, I'll tell you that I'm kind of like, I don't know how to feel.
About?
Which is weird.
Which
him being more
in. Him being out. Well, just the fact, like, I know it's not a, this would obviously be completely different if they were like, he's out 2 to 3 months. I'd be like, holy crap, this is actually weird.
I just want to know what the, like, I don't like when you don't know what the injury is.
Yeah.
You know, a body injury. Like, okay, did he jam his wrist? Did he, you know, break a rib? Like, we have no idea. And like, I like to know that so that I can be, as a player, okay, I know what that is. Or when he comes back, what we're looking for, is it his shot going to be weaker? Did he hurt his knee? Like, I'd love to know that. So any insiders that can provide that information would be great. Okay. Don Valley North would probably also like that.
I have another hot take.
It's going to be that you don't care about their injury, or you do?
No, I definitely care about the injury. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good take. I think part of this, in terms of the way that I can't quite latch onto a feeling, is that even now it's like, is he out a week? Is he out 2 weeks? Is he out three? Like, what's Kipper going to say during his show today? The weird thing for me in this one, or one of them, not weird. But the hot take, I guess I would create is like, Marner is, we've said it before, Jackie came on, she said that take too. Like, a lot of people who watch this team know that Marner is a huge difference maker in terms of their ability to win a cup. Like, they might win some regular season games without him. I think that they need him to be at his best to have their true identity as a team. Like, he is a high motor, high driver player when he is at his best. And during the playoffs, he has not been that. But what happens come playoff time is the games get tougher. Teams get tougher. Games get nastier. Whistles get swallowed. And this is your second injury bumping into somebody at practice, and you're just a little guy.
Yeah. It's the bumping into practice thing that really bugs me, too. He didn't go, you know, driving towards the net in a tie game to bury a puck.
It's two games.
Muzzin and him colliding.
So maybe he could play through this in the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he could tough this one out. Maybe this is overly cautious. But, yeah, two times this year where you got dinged up because you got bumped by a teammate at practice, and you're the guy who has said in the past, too, that you didn't hold up quite the same way in the playoffs. That's not the sign I want. I don't even think this is a hot take. I bring this all back, actually. What? I think this is a totally reasonably measured take and that everybody should also agree with it. Do you guys agree?
That everyone should agree with you?
Yeah, both.
Always,
yeah.
JD.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
It's easier if I just say yes.
Yeah, good call.
But no, this is a guy who he hasn't missed a ton of time.
No, he hasn't.
So this is where, like, I know that he's, you know, maybe has that concern or whatever, but like,
small.
He hasn't missed a lot of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that makes me more concerned or less that, like, this is something that's keeping him out an extended time, and usually he's been good to bounce back, or maybe this is why he's able to play so much, as they take it cautious with it. Every time I say cautious now, I feel like Kasha? I'm going to say Kasha by accident.
Yeah, I know. I hear it too.
I know. I just got a text.
Andrzej Cautious.
Just got a text from my old coach. Overly cautious or overly cautious? Yeah, you know.
What else is on that list of most mispronounced words?
Kasha. Shout out to MJ, my old coach. She listens every day.
Yeah, so I don't know on this Marner stuff. Like, obviously,
No, nobody knows.
Mostly this is the issue is that like it's a frustrating news cycle to like have zero information. And I know we talked about this with Elliot yesterday, and like not everything is about gambling and not everything is about, I mean, regrettably, not everything is about the fan going to the arena tonight. But yeah, a little more transparency would go a long way.
What else we got in the text line? Otherwise, I'm giving a Manning cast take.
We got lots. Yeah. Ian from Mississauga. What are your guys' thoughts on the Jake Paul fight and Tommy Fury backing out?
Finally. I think Tommy Fury has got to be the world's dumbest human being who ever lived. Like, if that guy has the ability to get out of bed, he should have showed up for this fight. Like, did you see the Ben Askren fight against Jake Paul? He was completely out of shape. He wasn't healthy. And he got knocked the bleep out. But you know why? It's because it's the same game that you play with all of your friends when you go, hey, how much would it cost you to get punched in the face by Mike Tyson? And you go like, I don't know, man, like I might die, so I need my money for my family to continue. And like if
like
I live
maybe like $2 million?
Yeah, I gotta cover my hospital bills. Yeah, exactly. Like I wanna be able to go see specialized people like brain doctors in the States to make sure that after I take the Tyson punch that I'm okay. Tyson Fury, millions of dollars. You could have just had millions.
Tommy Fury.
Yes, sorry. He's a half brother of Tyson Fury.
Yeah. Broken rib and chest infection is the answer he gave.
Yeah, yeah. Guess what? Not enough. You got to go fight. Honest to God, this is the dumbest guy. You're not fighting the world's most dangerous. You're not fighting Tyson. You're fighting Jake Paul. Like, he's the worst that is going to happen to you is that you get embarrassed. Hell, even
I was
like,
going to say, do you
that
know
could
how
be a good thing?
Do
for
you know
your
how
life?
Embarrassing it already is for Jake Paul to call you embarrassing?
No, I know.
That's pretty low.
No, Tommy Fury, this is the end of your career. This is so embarrassing.
You'll never make it as a pro boxer.
No, you're the dumbest. Honest to God, I think this guy might be the dumbest person alive. Like this is you got to be. Like there's millions of dollars that are right there. I think Jake Paul called him Tommy Fumbles.
Yeah,
and it's like yeah. Bang on. Tommy Fumbles. The bag was right there. You had all the money just right in front of you. Who cares if you lose to Jake Paul? Everybody loses to Jake Paul. Like, who cares? Just go get the money. You're an idiot. God. Tommy Fumbles forever.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Is like, and I don't want to
get another shot.
I don't want to side with Jake Paul too often.
Oh, I thought you meant with me.
No. Well, that too. Yeah. But no, he said the show must go on. Yeah. And I think that... Yes, if this were like a legitimate boxing event that we cared about the outcome and the science of the boxing, then going in with a broken rib and a chest infection or whatever, you can see your way past it. But like, it's entertainment. This is not
idiot.
Really real.
Idiot.
So,
all-time idiot.
I mean, hey, Tyrone Woodley, get that bag again.
Yeah.
King.
And guess what? I will watch that again.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I will watch it, and I will hope that Tyron knocks him out.
Yeah, I'm a broken person. Of course I'm going
to
watch
it. Yeah, I have nothing else to do. Are you going to watch it, Ailish?
As long as it's not Sunday with my big day of sports.
Not this Saturday, the next Saturday.
Oh, yeah, then sure. I can't think that far ahead. All I'm worried about F1 this Sunday, the Grey Cup this Sunday.
Yeah.
My Bills on Sunday.
Yeah, Grey Cup.
Ooh, short week.
Yeah,
short week.
Brady.
I don't want to talk about it. Here's a good
Aren't
text.
You off on Monday?
No.
Okay.
No, that's
I got the days confused.
Yeah, that's a little ahead.
No,
I got a
I was
trip planned
say,
the
like,
next week.
No, okay. I was just going to say I'm super jealous because I want to get Grey Cup Monday off.
Nope.
I get
nope,
really nope. bombed at that.
Here's game. A text about, this is good.
Oh,
actually,
it's better
no,
be
one
good.
Just came in right now, much for Blake.
Okay.
Best Canadian wrestler, Bret Hart, Edge, or Saskatchewan's Brock Lesnar?
Bret Hart is... like the best of all time.
Blake straight up offended by that question.
How dare you?
No, so the joke.
You had to load it up.
I'm assuming the joke here is based on the Vlad Guerrero Tip O'Neill thing.
Okay.
That Brock Lesnar is not from Saskatchewan, but he has a farm in Saskatchewan and like lives there.
Who's the other guy that he said?
Edge, our pal, friend of the show.
Yeah,
I say Edge. I say Edge all the way. I'm not even kidding. Like it's definitely Edge.
If he spears Dangle through a table, then it'll be Edge.
If Bret Hart comes on this show and he starts saying cool things about the Leafs, then you're great. But he didn't, so who cares?
I mean, I've hit him up for articles before.
Also, like, why? I'll never understand why the guy who in the scripted thing lost a scripted thing is like still so mad. It's just the craziest story to me ever. Like, I'll never understand the Montreal Screwjob. It's like they were like, oh, this guy, they wanted him to lose, and he wouldn't play ball, and so they made him lose, and then he's mad at his fake sport. It's like, oh, what a story. Let's talk about this for 40 years. Like, what? I'll never understand. Team Edge.
Moving on.
Blake's mad at that too.
That's no, I'm not.
No, I'm just kidding.
I know that I'm probably close to my limit for wrestling.
I went deeper with wrestling. Yeah. I'm just like the much. I've actually seen a documentary on it, and yeah. I came away from the whole thing. I was like, I still don't get it.
Well, Brett screwed Brett is a popular sentiment. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it is a counter sentiment to all of that.
Yeah.
Bret Hart's biography is a really great read. Obviously, you only get his perspective on it, but he's very like self-deprecating okay. about it all and honest about, you know, his side of it and stuff.
Good little stocking stuffer if you're in the market.
So it's a big stocking to fit a whole book in.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
You don't know what big stockings are, I guess. Ailish is like, I was raised on 3% milk. I don't know what stockings look like.
You should see the size of these stockings that I was drinking 3% milk.
You're like that guy drinking from the jug. The farm boy with the overalls. What's next?
Okay, do you guys feel that once Jason Spezza is done his playing career, he would fit nicely on the Leafs coaching staff? Thanks, Crankio Joe from Oro Station. Follow up, I feel Jason Spezza's leadership qualities that has shown in the last couple of years would fit just nicely. I think that is a great career plan for Jason Spezza.
Power play coach,
overall, just...
Whoa, Spencer Carberry, this guy fixed the power play and you guys are already like
I don't see him fitting completely in that role, but I think being involved in organization 100% would be a great move for him, especially since he's won this fan base over in his short time here, even though he spent most of his career being against the Toronto Maple Leafs. He just has been such a great leader, and over the last couple games, I think it's even shown even more. He got his 1,200 career game, and you got to do some reflection on what kind of character he has and his leadership abilities, and I think that would be a great fit for him. I would hope that he would want to be involved in the game anywhere moving forward.
Can we not anywhere here? Do you want to pretend you're Jason Spezza?
Yes,
I'll be Brendan Shanahan.
Hi.
Okay, so like you not come. Oh, hey Jason, like come to my office. Your career.
Hey, what's up?
So you're thinking about retiring?
Yeah, I'm thinking about retiring.
Also, like, where else are you gonna go?
Canada.
But are you really gonna go anywhere? What else are you gonna do?
Nothing, coach. Yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking: more minimum salaries for you.
Just keep playing.
No, what are you gonna? Where are you gonna go, Jason? Oh, you're really gonna go back to Ottawa? I don't see it.
I don't see it.
So you want to stand on the bench? You want to still show guys how cool the tapes are? You want to hang out with us? Maybe we groom you for a front office job someday. Like.
Hey, maybe he hangs out with us. Groom for a media job.
Oh.
I
The Fan Morning Show with Jason Spezza.
I'll tell you this. Well, if it was the Fan Morning Show with Jason Spezza, all of us are gone
cleaning
out salary for Jason Spezza because he's not taking the minimum to work here. I think that he's destined to be just a hockey lifer that's going to be someone around. If he was available to the media, I think that the bidding war would be like significant for him, that he would be a real treasured guy considering his like the way that he's respected, the stories he'd have, how he's articulate. There's just a lot of reasons why you'd like Spezza.
And like you'd think the way he reads and feels the game translates well to explaining it on air.
I'd love to see him actually with like the Marlies, the young kids coming up, how much of an impact he would have in like the scouting department or the player development department with people that haven't even gotten to the NHL level yet. Like he would make such an impact with the Marlies, especially because he could like take some kids under his wing in a sense and give them like the right, I don't know, development path.
I don't see scouting for him just because being here has been so important and scouting is a grind. You got to hit the road.
Yeah. More player development once they've gotten the kids in the organization.
I remember talking to Chris Draper once because he does some work like that with the Detroit Red Wings. And he was like calling me from some rink in God knows where. And I'm like, dude, you're Chris Draper. Like, why are you doing this?
Like the Ukraine. Like,
yeah. I think it was in Ontario. Yeah, but I was like, dude, like you're really grinding out these hours on the road. Like scouting is hard. There's no form of scouting that's easy. It's one of the hardest jobs I think in all of professional sports. It's one of those things like everyone's like, oh, I'd like to be a scout someday. And then you try it out for like 5 minutes and you're like, oh,
you're like
my God.
You're like driving to like Beaverton.
Have you ever heard Masai Ujiri's story about being a scout? Mm. It's the world's worst existence. The idea that anyone actually becomes a scout makes me think that you're kind of like a little bit psycho because
NBA advanced scout is
No, it's
wild.
Nuts. But that's how it is in every sport. It's like it's different like in terms of Just think about the international travel that you need to take advantage.
Like, and Spezza's made almost $90 million.
Yeah, no, he's doing it. That's what he does every time he opens up his bank account. He calls his financial advisor. he's not going anywhere. He's going to be all right. What's next?
This is an interesting follow-up to the Tommy Fury. So you guys don't understand enough about Fury. Well, hold on. Fury backstory to understand why he chickened out. Tommy has more to lose in his purse against Paul. If he took the fight and lost, his fiance is likely Europe's most powerful influencer, and a loss negatively impacts her career. Molly May, his fiance, is making $500,000 a post. On top of that, he's obviously a Fury as well and will be disowned if he were to lose. I'd be a chicken too.
Then why take the fight?
I don't know anything about Molly May.
I was just going to say that
a lot of bronzer.
For the person who's who's making the most money in the world.
6.2 million followers.
500,000. Yeah, but 6.2 million followers isn't even that many.
$500,000
I don't know. Where's that stat coming from? Like, either way, 6.2 million doesn't seem like that many, all things considered, right? Like, if you're talking about
influencers. Europe's most powerful influencer. I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, listen,
just
an
interesting perspective.
I didn't think about that.
They didn't sign their name on the text, so we can't, you know.
Hey, listen, I actually appreciate this perspective because I'm definitely going to go creep this.
Molly May.
Oh, yeah. Like, immediately, as soon as it shows up, Molly May's Instagram page is like, that's the number one thing to do today. So
apparently, his purse for this would have been $1 million plus 500K if he won.
Yeah, which isn't crazy great, but still. But guess what? He does win, or he even makes it a competitive fight, whatever. Actually, if he wins, it's even better for him because he ends up getting a rematch because Paul asked him for it. No, man, he's an all-time idiot. Like, he had the money. It's right there. It was $1.5 million. That was right there on the table for you, and you're not going to get it because your girlfriend posts Instagram posts. Could you imagine if that was actually... Could you imagine if that was actually the conversation? So, sweetest dear, you can't take the fight. I make too much money with my Instagram posts, and you're going to cost me my money. And he's like, okay. That sounds right. I'll not fight. I'll be a clown. And he doesn't do it. Either way, he's the dumbest guy. There's no level that it's not. Like, I get it. If this is the truth, then I think I get it more now. It only reinforces my opinion on this guy.
Great accent. He's an idiot.
That was actually really good.
Yeah. I had messaged you guys last night that Kalen Azubuki on the Warriors broadcast, did the Ailish thing where he's doing an ad read in a really funny way and, like, accidentally slips into an accent that you can't place. He should take some lessons from our guy JD here.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we sign off, multiple people messaged about this. Yeah. Humans are the only mammals that continue to drink milk after they've been weaned off of it from their mother.
What a weird thing to say.
Multiple people sent that type of information.
Milk was a bad choice.
good.
But honestly.
I was going to ask, should I build my diet around what a deer eats or what a cow eats?
No, but also, don't you think that if you could offer them more milk that they would take? Like, think about a cat. Offer a cat milk, they're like,
cats.
Oh my God, milk. They're so stoked. Every other animal, it's just like they don't have access to it anymore. It's like, yeah, no duh, we're humans. It's like,
they're not going to the grocery store.
Yeah, they're like, did you know humans are the only ones who cook steaks? Like, thanks. Like, what do you do? Great stat.
We're the only ones who use money, too. That feels like a natural place to stop. This has been the Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Sports at 590, The Fan.